Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, December 6th, 2015. This is episode 1244. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device. Visit Gazelle.com today. Hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and latkes, jelly donuts. It's Hanukkah. Happy, this isn't the first day, but it's at sunset we begin. And we'll talk digital photography in just a little bit with Chris Marquardt, our digital photo guy. He's sitting in the chat room ready and waiting. If you want to sit in the chat room, join the kids, the smart kids, the wiseacres in the back of the class. It's so funny, even when we have studio audiences here. If there's rows, nobody ever sits in the front row. It's not like you're going to call on somebody. We went to, for my birthday last week, Lisa and I flew to Las Vegas to see Cirque du Soleil. And she unwittingly, to me, she got us front row seats. And I thought, oh, I'm in trouble. But we managed to avoid getting pulled into the show, although many others around us did. And it was the sexy Cirque du Soleil. So I'm very glad. I'm especially glad that I get pulled into the show. So I understand why people don't sit in the front row. But you can, on this show, sit in the front row. It's okay. You'll hear better. All you have to do is go to techguylabs.com. There's a link there to the chat room right under my picture. People sometimes say to me, I went to the website. I can't find the phone number. You said it's there. I can't find the chat room. You said it's there. It's on the front page, but it's hidden because I know you're looking at my picture and just saying, wow, that is one handsome man. And then you don't see underneath. You're not saying that? Oh. Well, I don't know what the excuse is, but it's right under the picture there. And you could join the chat room. You could be a part of the wiseacres and the helpers. 500, 600 strong today, 487 in there right now, although the number's going up as the show gets underway. And that's a very important part of the show. When I first started doing, it was computers back then, computer question and answer back in 1991. I could pretty much answer everything because there wasn't that much, you know. It wasn't complicated as well. It's become complicated. Back then, it was Windows or Mac. I don't think we talked much about Linux. The internet wasn't really around. I mean, it was around, but nobody could use it. So. You talked mostly about Windows 3.1 and DOS 6.0, 6.22. I could master that. That was easy. One man could do that. And we didn't have Google then, so I couldn't, do quick Google searches or anything, or I couldn't refer people to web pages for extra help. None of that. We didn't even have a web page. What's a web page? It had only been invented 2 years earlier. Nobody knew about that. So life was easy. Those were simple times. Now, hey, we got to cover not only Windows, and by the way, 18 different flavors of Windows, all the way up to Windows 10. We got to cover Macintosh. We got to cover iPhone and Android phone and a huge variety of the Android phones, tablets, home theater, digital photography. I mean, it just goes on and on. There's a huge... So while I attempt at every juncture to master every one of those fields, I'm afraid I... I can. So that's where the chat room comes in handy. By the time we fill up that chat room, 504 in there right now, they're all coming in. They're all filtering in. Think of it as a giant room full of smarty pants. And they're sitting there waiting for your question, and they can answer those. They can, you can query them, and they'll say, yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. And if they can't do it, well, we also have the website, techguylabs.com. All the questions and answers are there, at first in text, eventually audio and video after a few days. And then you can go and you can see the question, see the answer, and you can add your thoughts because we have a comment section. That's all free and open and no sign up or anything. So I think that there's no question that will come in that we can't answer if there is an answer. If there's no answer, I don't know. I saw a very odd story this Sunday because I'm always scanning the news for stuff you might be interested in. The amazing fact that there are more now cell phone only households in the United States than there are landline, no cell phone, even landline plus cell phone. There are only 8% of the households in the whole U.S. of A, only 8% have a landline but no cell phone. About 42% have a landline and a cell phone. I would have thought that would be the majority. It's not. The majority, cell phone only. That's 47%. Almost half of all households in the U.S. have a landline, or don't have a landline, have only a cell phone. Wow. And you know who tracks that? Not the Department of Cell Phoneology, not AT&T. The Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, and I guess the reason they've been tracking that is because they're always doing surveys to find out how healthy people are, you know, what's going on. And they've had to pay attention to the fact that, and this is, you know, pollsters are a little behind on this, that most people now are cell phones. You know, most pollsters, when they're doing those presidential polls, you might wonder, why do those numbers seem so strange? Well, because they're only talking to people with landlines. So it eliminates 47% of the populace, and mostly the young people, poor people, richer people. I don't know who it is. But what's really interesting is the people who are cell phone only are the least healthy people. What? According to the Centers for Disease Control and the National Health Interview, they do 40,000 households every year. And they talk to everybody, people without even any service at all. They come to your door. So one of the things they found out is that people who are wireless only, this is from the Centers for Disease Control, people who are wireless only are more likely to smoke. What? More likely to binge drink. What? More likely to be uninsured. You know why? I think those are younger people, right? That's what it really is. And it's sad to say, but I see a lot of people who should know better in their 20s, early 20s, young, sometimes they're teens still, smoking because they think they're immortal, right? And they say, oh, well, you know, I'll quit someday. No, don't do it. Hard to quit. And they probably are, you know, they're young, they're in college, a lot of them. Maybe they're binge drinking. Maybe that's why. I don't know. More likely but uninsured. Yeah, maybe. It's a strange demographic. Partly related to income, young adults living in rental housing are more likely to be wireless only. And they tend to be lower income because they haven't, you know, they don't have careers yet. Well, but also lower income households tend to be wireless only. It's probably less expensive to have a cell phone alone than a cell phone and a landline, for sure. I don't know if you could say there's a correlation between people who have only cell phones and risky behavior. Oh, you guys like to live on the edge. You with their iPhones there, you're dangerous people. But only 18% of adults living in landline-only households drink heavily, whereas 29% of wireless-only are binge drinkers. So there you go. I think it's one of those, correlation does not equal causation. There's some correlation, obviously, but you can't say they're related. There's some common point. Maybe they're young. Can you believe that 47% of all Americans don't have landlines anymore? We live in interesting times, and that's why I love doing this show, because that's what we talk about. We talk about the future, and the future is already here. Who said that great saying? The future's already here, it's just not evenly distributed. Some people live farther in the future than we do, and I come from the future to fill you in on what you can expect. And that's what we do on the show. 888-88-ASK-LEO, that's my phone number. If you want to make a phone call into the future, 888-827-5536. Toll free. That's a landline. Give us a ring and we'll talk. That was William Gibson of Neuromancer fame who said that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. We are talking high tech, answering questions, taking your suggestions, your thoughts about anything with a chip in it. Heather Hammon, the phone ranger, doing double duty this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Hello, Heather Hammon.
Hello.
Who should I? I see you've lined up a lovely bunch of people. Very good looking bunch of people.
Aren't they?
Yeah. Almost, I would say, sharp.
Yeah.
Sharp-dressed people.
Exactly. In their Sunday best.
In their Sunday best. That's why, of course.
Mm-hmm. So, and Chris is wearing a wonderful hat.
Mmm.
In Cupertino.
A chapeau.
However.
Yes.
He cannot find, and he's wondering if you know where it might be, his watch.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Chris in Cupertino. Hello, Chris.
Oh, Taco from 1983.
Very good. Very good. Putting on the Ritz.
I'm impressed. I need some help.
Yes.
I need some help. And that is, I have a Gear S. And
you know, I thought those were quite nice. Did you? Do you like the Gear S? That's the one with the dot with the dial, right?
Yeah, I don't use it for that. I had the original Gear, and I got the Gear S, and I just use it Bluetooth-wise. Okay. It's just easier, and I don't need all the call forwarding and all that good stuff. The problem is, I woke up this morning, and I can't find it. And so the one thing I thought of is I looked in Bluetooth, and my Bluetooth settings, rather, and it shows, you know, the Gear being there, obviously not currently paired.
So it's good. That's
is there a way I can kind of reverse engineer and look at the history of when the item was paired last?
No. So you're saying it's not paired. So that means it's not within 30 feet. Although my experience with smartwatches, I've only worn the Gear S for a little while. My experience with smartwatches is, they often unpair even when they're sitting right next to the phone. I don't know why. It's a Bluetooth thing. You just wouldn't understand. But there's no way to go back and see where that watch is. In fact, that's one thing that Android does quite well. You're not using Android, alas.
Yes, I am.
Oh, it isn't. You have the Gear S, the original, which is not Tizen, but Android Wear. Is that right? No, it's Tizen.
It is Tizen.
Yeah, so it's not Android Wear. That's one of the things Android Wear does well, is keep track of your devices. But I don't think Samsung's built that into the S.
So the ability. So, for example, let's say I pair a speaker, right, an hour ago.
Yeah.
And it was unpaired an hour ago. There's no way of going into my phone and seeing the last time that speaker was paired, or in this case, the Gear S.
Not that I know of. That'd be nice. That's a nice feature. But no. Wouldn't that help you find your watch? Where's the last time you saw it? That's what I always ask my kids. Well, where's the last time you saw it? If I knew, Dad, it wouldn't be lost. Where's the last time you saw
it?
Yeah,
very true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't. Unless I'm looking at the chat room, but unless somebody knows something I don't know, I don't believe that's a feature that that Bluetooth supports. That would be a good thing, though. You could easily build that in. Samsung could have built that into the Gear S. I think it's just an excuse for you to get the new Gear S. You had the original Gear S.
Yeah, Yeah.
The new one's nice.
Wow.
The S2 is round. How long ago did you... The Gear S is so big. Now, wait a minute. Isn't that the one that has a phone in... Is that the one that has a phone in it?
Yeah, it's the one that has the phone in it, although I just use it. I don't have it activated.
Oh, because then you could... Then, then maybe you could find it. You could call it.
Yeah.
Or, and it would be, if the battery weren't dead, it would be on the, be on the network. You might be able to track it down that way. You never set it up. An Android device manager won't work because it's Tizen. So I think you're out of luck, and the chat room seems to agree. But it's in the house. It's in the house. It's around. That thing's big. You can't lose that, Chris.
Well, evidently I did, and importantly, it's just tracking back in terms of, geez, do I want to go back to that bar from last night?
Oh yeah,
during the daytime.
Oh yeah, yeah, you left it in the bar. Sure, yeah.
But I've been a big fan listening to you from actually when you replaced Jeff Levy on KFI, and been a listener ever since.
Oh, that's great.
I do thank you for everything.
I have been meaning to mention that Mr. Levy passed away a couple of months ago, I'm sad to say. He was a great guy. I had appeared on his show. He was the computer guy on KFI. And back in 2004, he moved to another station in Los Angeles. And the
KNX, yeah.
The very nice program director, KFI, Robin Bertolucci, who's still there and is probably the queen of L.A. radio, called me and said, would you like to? I said, yes. You didn't even hear what I said. I said, I'll do it. Whatever you say, Robin, I'll do it. And ever since, I've been on KFI and now all over the country doing the Tech Guy show. So I owe Jeff a little bit. And great guy. You can kind of see his final thoughts and a tribute to him at his website, Jeff Levy, LEVY.com. Sad to say he's passed away. But, Chris, nice to talk to you. If you're in Cupertino, you could just go next door and say, hey, I lost my watch. Could I borrow an Apple Watch? Actually, losing electronic devices in bars in Cupertino is a grand old tradition. Didn't the iPhone 4 get lost in a bar there?
Somebody might out. Yeah, I think I was at the same place.
You know, you could maybe somebody could find it and say, I found the new Apple Watch, and they won't even know. They'll be so excited. Chris, I wish there were a better answer for you. I'm afraid not, but it's nice to talk to you. It's the first time anybody's gotten up in the morning and called me saying, do you know where my watch is? So that is actually a lesson, maybe a word to the wise. They're easy to lose. If your systems have some feature that allows you to note the watch's location, turn those on. Does Android Wear do watches? Not you, Siri.
You need to unlock your iPhone first.
I know. Oh, no, I wasn't. No. Oh. Siri's very sensitive. When I talk about other people's devices, she takes umbrage. Rob and Tarzana, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Leo. Got a question for you.
Yeah.
And I've gotten a little mixed up. I've listened to you quite a bit. But if I'm tethering my smartphone to my laptop so it can receive the phone's signal, should I still use a VPN to protect myself? Or are the VPNs primarily for when you're using a public Wi-Fi?
Yeah. Your smartphone is not public. And in fact, modern LTE-based smartphones, all of them are, data is encrypted. And to my knowledge, no one has yet figured out how to hack it. It was very common to get the old cell phone technologies hacked. In fact, Steve Wozniak used to listen in on phone calls all the time. He was proud of that. He liked to be a little bit of a hacker and a troublemaker. But no, you're secure. I want to talk a little bit about VPNs. Our last caller asked an interesting question. He wants to secure his internet conversations so prying eyes can't see what he's doing. He's tethering to his smartphone. The tether to the smartphone, which is over Bluetooth, is fairly secure. Bluetooth is not the securest of all protocols, but secure enough. It's not something somebody can just see what's going on. It is encrypted. And then once you get into the cell phone, your conversation going from the cell phone to the cell tower is encrypted, and then it's on your carrier's network. At that point, it's on the public internet. And once it's on the public internet, as you probably know, it's not going directly to yahoo.com or the techguylabs.com. It's hopping through a number of servers, and all along the way, it's visible to anybody who wants to see it. It's one of the reasons a number of people, including especially Google, are promoting the idea of what they call HTTPS everywhere. Yeah, that's a stirring slogan. I want a button that says that. To geeks, it makes sense, but to the rest of the world, it's what? HTTPS. S is secure, and you know HTTP is what comes before a web page. So what they're saying is we want all internet traffic to be secured, to be encrypted. Currently, when you go to your bank or you go online shopping at Amazon or any other reputable store, you'll notice that your browser window says HTTPS all of a sudden, and you're in a secure environment. That means that the data coming from your smartphone through the Bluetooth to your regular phone, to the carrier cell tower, to the carrier, to the public internet, all the way to the bank is encrypted. The only people who can read that traffic are the people who have the keys at either end. Everybody else is blind to that traffic. That's what you want, especially if you're banking or buying, you know, sending a credit card. And that's a very good system. It works. It's secure. There are attacks against it. But with a modern machine, you should be all right. You shouldn't have any problem with that. So the good news is more and more of that is encrypted. Gmail, for instance, all the way secure. Facebook, all the way secure. Facebook, of all things, completely secure. So the only people who can see your Facebook traffic are you at this end and Facebook at the other end, and nobody in between can sniff it, can look at it. Now, if you go to, my site, techguylabs.com, that's an HTTP site. And we have, you know, because I don't feel like that's really necessary to secure that, there's no transaction at all. I'm not asking for any information. I don't take credit cards or email addresses or anything. You're looking at web pages. That's fair. What you're seeing is publicly available on the internet. Doesn't seem like that needs to be secured. Eventually, we will, because that's the trend. Google even says you'll get better search ranking if you have a secure website, an HTTPS website. So eventually, we'll do that. But there's no secrets being exchanged. So even if you were on a public internet, you know, you're sitting in a coffee shop, so somebody sees you're visiting my website. That's harmless. A little less harmless with Facebook, right? Because if they could steal your Facebook login, that would be bad news, right? So it's good that Facebook is encrypted. It's good your email is encrypted. Make sure it is. You know, some older internet service providers may not do that. They want to encrypt not only the password, not only the login, but all the transactions. When you're reading email, it shouldn't be visible in a public Wi-Fi setting. But most places are, and you should look at the browser. You can see a lot, sometimes there's a padlock. Now, it depends on the browser. Apple has decided, I think mistakenly, to hide the HTTPS. They say, oh, nobody wants to see that. Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. But there is still an indicator in Safari that you're in a secure site. So what about this VPN? What does that do, and why would you want it? People first learned about VPNs, virtual private networks, at work. A VPN is what your business might use so that employees can be on the business network, the company's network, when they're at home. You don't want that to be a public event. You want that to be private. And you want to authenticate the person so that it's really an employee when they're on the network. So most businesses, if they allow logins from off-site, from your house or from traveling, will use a VPN. You run some software on your computer, you log in to the work computers, and now it's as if you're sitting in your office. The way that works is it makes an encrypted tunnel. Think of it as like a brick tunnel. It's impervious to prying eyes, and all the data is going back and forth through there. There's two parts, of course. There's the authentication and there's the encryption. You can also use VPN if you'd like. There are third-party VPN providers who say, we'll provide a VPN service. You log into our service, and all of the information, even if it's an unencrypted thing, even if it's Leo's website, will be encrypted from your computer to our server. So nobody at a coffee shop can see it. And you could do that on your phone. You could run a VPN on your phone, but nobody could see it. The problem is, in order for you to contact sites like mine, you have to at some point be unencrypted. There's no VPN on my website. You have to be on the public internet to see my website. So what will happen is you'll emerge onto the public internet wherever that VPN server lives. And then you'll be on the internet. You're not anonymous because in order to be at my website, I have to know what your address is. So you're not anonymous. There might be some anonymizing features, but that's not the main purpose. The main purpose is to hide what's going on up to that point and then go out on the public internet. So it's a very limited use because you're still, if you're still on the public internet, you're just not. Mostly a VPN is useful nowadays if you want to look like you're coming from another country. Why would you want to do that? Well, people sometimes want to watch BBC shows. The BBC in the UK blocks any addresses outside of the UK because it's a public service paid for by British citizens, with their license fees. So they say, well, if you're outside the United Kingdom, you can't watch the BBC. So there are people who want to watch shows on the BBC. You want to see Doctor Who the minute it's available, who will use a VPN with an endpoint in England. Then you look as if you're from England. And of course, a lot of sites are now wise to this, unless they take other measures to verify your location, they'll say, oh, yeah, you're in England, so we'll let you watch Doctor Who. That's the chief use. There are downsides to VPNs. They can slow you down because, of course, there's an extra layer of encryption and an extra server that you have to go to. So sometimes they're not great for watching video, ironically. That's one of the things people want to use them for. VPNs are, I think, nowadays less important because, and it's really up to you to check, as long as the sites that you want private, you want to be private, are HTTPS. They're secure sites. And that's probably true of banking, shopping sites. I hope it's true of your email. If you're using Google email or Yahoo email, it is. Check. It's easy to see in your browser, HTTPS. If those are secure sites, all the transactions, the logins are secure, then the VPN doesn't really add any additional security. It only encrypts, only protects you when visiting sites that you like mine, that who cares? Oh, he's visiting techguylabs.com. Ooh. So I think that as long as you understand what a VPN does, you can decide whether you want to. There's a cost to it, not only a financial cost. You usually have to pay a few dollars a month for it, but there's a speed cost, a complexity cost, and it may not really be necessary as long as you understand that what's encrypted and what's not in your transaction. So I wanted to explain that. I think people just, it's a default now. Oh yeah, I need a VPN. Not necessarily. It used to be. But now that most sites that you really want secure are encrypted, are secure, I think it's less necessary. 8888 ask Leo, and on your cell phone it is safe. It's encrypted until it gets to the cell network, just like other internet traffic. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Bet Ryan Seacrest never does that. Hits his microphone like that. He's a professional. I'm just the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. I was reading up on Ryan Seacrest. Because, he's like me. He's a radio show host. Who works 20 hours a day. Just bought a $37 million house in Los Angeles. Renovated by Ellen DeGeneres. Here's an interesting story. I didn't know. This has nothing to do with tech, but Ellen DeGeneres apparently is a house flipper. Did you know that?
No way.
She loves fixing up houses and selling them.
Did you get your nails done? Is that how you got all this intense?
Yes. How do you know? And another thing. I got the latest Gwen Stefani gossip, but we'll save that for later. 8888 Ask Leo. This is not a gossip show. In fact, one of the great pleasures of the Tech Guy show, in this day and age when the news is so grim, and there's so much stuff, gossip and bad news, and just floating all around you, this show, we ignore the outside world. This show is hermetically sealed. We talk about tech. We just talk about tech. And it's always good news. It's always happy, happy, joy, joy, because it's the toy store. So if, you know, I know a lot of times you turn on the radio, oh, I don't want to hear more bad news. But no, this is the happy, happy, joy, joy show. Nothing but good news. Greg in Conifer, Colorado. Ooh, I bet that sounds piney and snowy.
It is piney. It is snowy. How you doing?
I'm great, Greg. How are you?
Fine. Hey, so because of you, per my wife, this is entirely your fault. I bought quite a bunch of Ring doorbells, Ring.com.
Oh, doorbells. Nice. And, fantastic.
They were great. I took a couple to my dad down in Turlock, California, for an early Christmas present.
So this company is a sponsor of the podcast, so I should mention that up front. They make a doorbell that has a camera and a microphone, speakers, and you can monitor it not just from home but from the internet. So,
right.
So
my dad is 93, and he loves the device. The problem is, and you and I have discussed hearing problems a week or two ago. He is a little bit hard of hearing.
Right.
And there are two tones that the Ring doorbell will generate on your phone. Mm-hmm. He has an iPhone. One is the ding-dong when somebody presses the button at the door. The other one is the alert when the camera senses motion.
Right.
The alert tone, that little jingle-jingle thing, is out of his range of hearing.
Yeah, it's high-pitched, so, isn't it? It's like a little,
Like, it kind of reminds me of snowflakes for some reason.
Yeah.
Anyway. Is there a way to hack the software on the phone?
Yeah, because they don't, and I think this is a failing, and I will mention this to the Ring folks. They should allow you to assign different sounds.
Right.
Another reason why is everybody in the offices here has it. So when somebody's at somebody's doorbell, we all have the same sound, so we all pick up our phones going, is somebody at our door? And then it's Mike. Oh, no. No, it's Leo this time. So it should be. They should have assignable. That's something that's you kind of almost expect. It's a little trickier with the iPhone. On Android, it would be fairly easy. You would create a suitable sound and put it and name it the same thing as the Ring sound and put it in there, and you could replace it. The iPhone doesn't like you to do things like that. So,
well, I have it on I'm Android. Can I experiment with that? How would I do that on mine?
Well, what you want to do, and Android has their number of file browsing programs you could get. I use Astro or ES. I think it's ES Files. These are programs you download. You don't need to have root, and you can browse around. There's a file system. You know, Apple hides that. They don't want anybody to know that there's directories and file names, things like that. It's supposed to be invisible on iOS. Android goes, well, hey, it's a computer. What do you expect? So that means you can browse around, and you can find a folder. There'll be a couple of places it could be. Ring could place it, and I don't know. I don't have an Android device in front of me. Actually, I do. I could look. Ring could place it in the generic ringtones folder, or it could be in a folder named Ring for the app. And what you'll look for is either an audio file, an MP3 typically, but it could be other audio formats. You'll see an audio file. It'd probably say something like Ring or doorbell. And you can take it, see what it plays, make sure it's the one you want, and then replace it. Create a new one in the same file. You want to make it the same file format and the same name. It doesn't have to be the same size, and you should be able to do that. With the iPhone, you probably still can do it. There's a program from a company called Ecamm called PhoneView, ECAMM.com. PhoneView lets you plug in an iPhone via the lightning cable to a computer and then look at it. And you can't browse all the folders, and you may not be able to modify all the folders, but you should be able to see, or you might be able to see anyway, what those sounds are and where they're stored, and do something similar to Android. I can't guarantee it, though. Remember, Apple has a very different attitude towards you messing with your phone. They strongly discourage it. Apps can't look at other apps' data, et cetera, et cetera. So it's trickier to do this, and I'm not sure it's even possible. But, I'll do some research.
I should get him an S6 and...
try it first on your Android, see if you can do it. And then if you can, then you know what you could get him is a cheap Android tablet, then put the Ring software on there, and that would make the sound. But make sure that you can. I'll also work on this. I have a Nexus 7 in front of me, and I'll look at it and see if I can. And it's running the Ring software. And then the real thing to do, we should all do, is just call Ring or email Ring and say, hey, it'd be really nice if you would add this feature, because that is easy for them to do. We would like assignable ringtones. And you have a very good case for it. It's not just for, you know, aesthetics or vanity. It's because your dad can't hear the wind chime sound it makes.
Right. Yeah.
I don't like it because I don't.
I did call them, and they do have. They said they would invite me to some sort of.
It's in beta.
Parties for them.
Interesting. That means they're testing it out. There might be a newer version of the software will do this. I would like to see that. Yeah. Hey, thanks for the call. I'm glad you. So you like it? It's working for you and your dad?
Well, I've got seven of them, and they all work for me, which keeps me busy.
Seven?
Well, there's some in Conifer, and some, I've got a lot of entry doors. Some in
That's
Florida.
That's fantastic. So when you're at your vacation place in the mountains, you can hear what's going on in Florida. Isn't that great? I love that.
Well, it's you don't like to leave a house unsecured, and so
it's not as elaborate as a whole in-house camera security system, or you can't open the door with a Ring. But for what it is, very simple, and it gets the job done. And I think for a lot of people, that's all they need. Nice to talk to you again, Greg.
Same to you. Good weekend. Bye-bye.
All the best to your dad. That's something every app should do, and it's I'm sure it's on their list. You should be able to change the sounds it makes. And on an iPhone especially, that's something the app has to do because it's not so easily done for yourself. I want to remind you that we're online at techguylabs.com. Yes, it's not secure. It's not hard to secure a website. You have to buy a certificate, and then you have to do some magic at the server side, and then it's secure. The podcast site, we decided when we redesigned the site not so long ago to make that secure, twit.tv. I mean, that doesn't need to be secure, but Google likes it, so that makes me happy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our podcast today brought to you by those good folks at ZipRecruiter. This is an important part of running a business, that maybe even the most important part of running the business, that's challenging, but gosh, it makes such a difference. Hiring the right person. If you own a business or you're in HR, you know that the right person can transform a business, can be such a boon. The wrong person can bring a business down. So it's important that when you're filling a position, you get to as many people as possible, because that right one is, it's like a needle in a haystack, but ZipRecruiter helps a lot. That's what we use. ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy to find out more. ZipRecruiter, when you post there, will post to 100 plus job boards. With one click of the mouse, they also will match your request with 6 million current resumes in their own database. They'll also post to Twitter, Craigslist, all the social places. So you're really reaching out to the maximum number of people, because you don't know where that great employee's hiding. And then you may say, well, I don't want a million applications coming to my inbox. Don't worry. They're not emailing you. They're not calling you. All of the applicants go into ZipRecruiter's very easy-to-use interface. So you can quickly screen out the ones that just, are non-starters, rank the rest, and hire the best person fast. They also give you all sorts of tools for onboarding new hires. It really is like a little mini HR in a box here. Benefits and all of that. I love ZipRecruiter. It's been used by over 400,000 businesses. And I've got a free deal for you. Post once. Within 24 hours, you'll watch candidates roll into that easy-to-use interface. We got an email from Dan. He's a happy ZipRecruiter client. He wanted to tell us, he said, quote, the hardest part about running a business, when you need to hire, you have to spend extra time recruiting and you're short-staffed. That's true, isn't it? But with ZipRecruiter, I've gotten quality candidates within 24 hours of posting a job. ZipRecruiter's website makes this process so much faster by letting me manage candidates in one place. It is really great, and I want you to take a look at it. If you're responsible for hiring, if you're in the HR department, or you run your own business like I do, ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. It is a great service. And I've got 4 days free for you, which is probably enough to find that new employee. Easy peasy. Lemon squeezy. ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy here. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and photography. Yes, our digital photo guy, Chris Marquardt, joins us in about half an hour. Talk about our assignment and, I don't know, something interesting. He does a lot of photographic myth busting and mostly just kind of gets you out there with your camera, which is always a good thing. We'll also talk about smartphones, lots of smartphone conversations, smartwatches. I got them all. Got every phone, every watch, so I could talk about those. Have you ever done this? I thought I bought a BlackBerry Priv. I was sure of it. But I have no record of that. I guess I should go through my credit card statements. But I went to the BlackBerry site. I thought I went through the whole process. I'm pretty sure I pressed the buy button. In my mind, I did. And it said November 30th. And, well, I thought, well, it should be here by now. So I couldn't find an email from BlackBerry. I couldn't find any evidence that I bought it. Have you ever done that? It's like I must have got right to the very end and then forgot to press buy or something. Now I feel like I have a temporary reprieve. Should I still get the BlackBerry Priv? It's BlackBerry's first Android phone. It's apparently a very nice, simple Android version. Has an excellent camera. Might be one of the best cameras on the market today. Very close to it, if not. And a physical keyboard. One of those great BlackBerry keyboards, which I miss. I love. But it has been a long time now. We got used to touching, typing on glass. Swiping on glass for some of us. I've gotten pretty good with this swiping thing. Some keyboards allow you to, instead of tip, 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 tap, 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 just trace the word without lifting your finger off the screen. And those are quite, if you get used to it, you can be quite speedy with that. I guess I have to buy it. I have to buy it just because, but the problem is I don't know if I did. And I'd hate for a second one to come. So I have to figure out somehow if I've bought that BlackBerry Priv and if I did. And if I didn't, I guess I'll get another one. I feel like I should I feel like I should review it. Reverb Mike says he watched me buy it on the air. Did I do it on camera? I should go back and look at the tape. Don't you wish that sometimes when you're in an argument with your wife or your husband and they say, "Well, no, you said." Don't you wish you could say, "Well, let's check the tape. Let's roll back." I guess that's why the one reason it'd be good to be a Kardashian. You could always say, "Well, let's check the tape. We've got video. We could see what you said." Dale in Palmdale, California. Thanks for your patience, Dale. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I am well. How are you?
Doing really, really good.
Good.
Got a question for you. I've got an Android phone, and I've got a driving mode where I can answer the phone, like when I'm driving down the road and send text messages and all that. I just bought my wife the new iPhone, the S Plus, and I was wondering if they have the same thing for the iPhone.
Yeah, it would be really nice if the iPhone would say, "Oh, I see you're moving at more than 10 miles an hour. You're obviously not walking. You must be driving," because the GPS would know that, right? And then it would switch into some magic mode. And Motorola's assist program on the Moto X's do this. There's a program on Android called Agent that does this. If you pair it to your car via Bluetooth, or if it could tell you're moving, it will go into this mode where you can either say, "I don't want to hear the phone ring and I don't want to hear any text messages. I want to pay attention to driving." Or you could say, "If the phone rings, tell me who it is and I can answer with my voice. I don't have to take the phone out of my pocket," which is a violation of state law in many states. In fact, we talked to a trucker yesterday who said the fine is thousands of dollars if you're a trucker. With text messages, it says, "You have a text from Lisa. Would you like to respond? Would you like me to read it to you?" And you say, "Yes." Then it reads it to you. "Would you like to respond?" "Yes." And you can dictate a response. By the way, all of those things are still somewhat distracting, but I guess it's better than trying to handle a phone while you're handling the steering wheel. I don't know of a way to do it on the iPhone. I looked at a couple of websites. The problem really is that Apple is stingy with access to those metrics. It doesn't allow, and this is, Apple's doing this out of security, which I think is not an unreasonable point of view. It's certainly what, you know, people understand that when you get an iPhone, that's why you get an iPhone, because Apple's going to really lock it down. And so third-party applications, for instance, can't do as many things on an iPhone as they can do on an Android phone, including, in most cases, accessing things like the GPS and the Bluetooth to know where you are. So there are a couple of websites. I'm looking at drivesafe.ly. But you see, it's Android or BlackBerry only. Let me see if there's another one. Here is one, DriveSafe on the iTunes store, DriveSafe Mode. Protect your loved ones with this patented application. You'll get a notification via email when the driver's phone is in use and is in motion. So it doesn't prevent it. It just snitches. that's not what you want, right? That's just
no, not
that's
at all.
Yeah, that's so the oh, your kid is talking on the phone. But the fact that it can do that maybe indicates it's possible to do what we want, which is to treat us like adults and either, you know, allow us to turn off that feature or talk to us.
Well, does Siri listen to you as you're driving down the road as far as can you say?
On the new one, it does. So, yeah, my experience has been that it's not. So you can, on the new one, you could, iOS 9 and the iPhone 6S, hey, Siri. Okay, now my iPad woke up, but my phone didn't. So that's the problem. And you end up spending a lot of time going, hey, Siri.
Yeah, by that time you've lost it.
And that time you've plowed into somebody. So, and it doesn't allow you to answer phone calls. Hey, Siri would let you do things like send a text or call somebody. But if your phone's ringing, you can't say, hey, wake up and answer. And I'm afraid, as far as I know, that's it. You can, of course, tell the phone, do not disturb. But you have to do it manually, you know, so you have to remember when you get in the car to turn it on to do not disturb. I think this is something Apple should address, and it may end up being that it has to be an Apple app, because Apple really is reluctant to let third parties access those additional, you know, features, the information about what's going on.
Yeah, because I was seriously considering actually switching from my Samsung Note 4 because I was going to upgrade, and I was thinking of going to to the iPhone. But that was one of the features that I wanted, and the reason why I was considering it is because Samsung has now basically made their phone like an iPhone. You can't change the memory, you can't upgrade the memory, and you can't change the battery anymore. So,
right. Everybody's going that way. I'm sorry to say, because you get a more attractive design, and you can have more battery, because in order to have a removable battery, you have to wrap it in something that takes up space that could be used by actual battery. I don't know why Android phones have stopped using SD cards. I think it's because Google encouraged them not to. Although I noticed Motorola, which was a Google company and did not offer SD cards, additional memory, has now in their new ones allows you to do that. So they're rebelling against their former, you know, masters. I don't know why Samsung's doing it. It's modern Android devices, Marshmallow and even Lollipop before it, handled SD cards fine. There used to be a problem. So, by the way, I apologize to the 10,000 iPhones I woke up by shouting. I have to use a new name for, you know, I should call her Shlomo or something. That's my friend Andy does. I think, you know, if you're the kind of person that is looking for features like that, the iPhone is less desirable. You really can only do what Apple lets you do. But the trade-off is much better battery life. My iPhone 6S has no trouble getting through a full day. I have the 6S Plus, the bigger one, no trouble getting through a full day. And arguably better security, although arguably. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And what was Shlomo's response to all of that? Because I have the iPad Pro plugged in, so it says, hey, Shlomo, okay, now my iPad woke up, my iPhone did, so that's the problem. You end up spending a lot of time, hey, S, who, me? Thanks. 8888-ASK, Leo, that's the phone number if you've got a question, a comment, or a suggestion. Happy Hanukkah to those of you celebrating this evening. Still looking. We looked during the break. I looked during the break with the help of the chat room for solutions for iPhone. And while there seem to be some hardware solutions that will kind of design mostly for teenagers to prevent them from using their phone while they're driving, I don't know of any. And this would be a really great thing Apple could absolutely add, especially since there is now a motion coprocessor in the newer iPhones, the 6S iPhones. They are able to be in a low power mode. This is what the Moto X did. It was brilliant. And a second processor is running in this low power mode, not the big processor, just a little baby processor that only monitors things like motion and voice. And it can do that in a low power state without killing the battery. By the way, this is, you know, there's two reasons, as I mentioned, there's two reasons why Apple doesn't do stuff like this. Security and battery life. They really want to limit third-party applications' access to stuff. For instance, the new iPhones have an NFC chip, that near-field communication chip that lets you tap a cash register, you know, a point-of-sale device, and pay for it with Apple Pay. Android's had these for years, and they could do so much more. Your NFC chip can be tapped to a sticker on the wall and load a web page or check you in. It can be tapped on a Bluetooth speaker to pair the phone to the speaker, but not on an iPhone, because Apple doesn't let any third party have access to the NFC chip. The only thing Apple allows for the NFC chip is payments through Apple Pay. That's it. And that story goes on and on and on in the iPhone. The Apple tightly controls it. It's one of the reasons iPhones get better battery life. The issue of whether it's most secure, you could debate, because there are flaws in the iPhone that mean they're just different attack paths. I don't know if it's more secure. I, in fact, don't think it is more secure. But which is not to say that it's insecure or that Android phones are insecure. The exploits that take advantage of flaws in Android are few and far between. There have been exploits on iPhone apps, rogue apps that have gotten into the App Store and so forth. They're few and far between as well. I think you're pretty safe on any mobile platform. But I think it's hard to make the case that Apple's, I would say, draconian control of how the system works has given us a better, safer system. It's given us a better, maybe a better system, unless you want to do those things. Tom in Albuquerque, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
I am well. How are you?
I'm good. I got a question about backing up my Mac.
Okay.
First of all, I'd like to say I upgraded to Windows 10 on my main computer on your say-so, and I've loved it.
Well, that's a relief.
That's
a relief because there are, I think it's a small percentage, but there are a number of people who are having all sorts of problems with Windows 10. I haven't, but there are people saying that.
Me neither. I'm loving it.
Yeah, good.
I have a small Mac that I use for writing and stuff like that, and I back it up to a hard drive. But when it notified me that I was losing a bunch of disk space, and when I opened up this computer and looked at the storage, it's got like 90 gigabytes that it's got labeled as backups, and I've been trying to reclaim that.
So you think you're backing up to a separate drive, but apparently it's also backing up to the local drive.
It must be. I'm not a Mac person, so I can't for the life of me figure out what I'm doing wrong here.
You know, the first thing I checked, Apple comes with, Macintoshes come with a backup system called Time Machine. And that's the first thing. That's the first thing I'd suspect is that, in fact, Time Machine has decided to back up to your internal drive, which you don't want it to do, I don't think. So go to the So under the Apple, there's a selection for System Preferences, and in the that's called, you know, that's the control panel for Apple, and a System Preference pane, which is what Apple calls those control panel units, is called Time Machine. Take a look at it. Make sure, I would turn it off. I don't use Time Machine. Time Machine was Apple's easy to use backup, but again, like Apple, as with what I was just talking about, Apple makes it easy by making it very limited in capability. It's not my preferred form of backup for Macintosh. So make sure it's turned off. And I suspect, I mean, if you didn't set up any other backup, then Time Machine's doing it. It shouldn't do it on your local drive. That's not, it's supposed to do it on an external drive. But what I recommend, there's a really excellent backup program for Macintosh called Super Duper. And you can just Google Super Duper. You'll find it. And okay. It can be used in a traditional backup method, just, you know, automatically synchronizing with an external drive, which is what I would do. But it can also make that external drive bootable. It can actually duplicate the what – and when there's nothing on Windows that does this. And I love it. It can, in real time, keep that external drive identical to the internal drive so that if the internal drive dies, you can boot to the external drive and operate the machine. It's a great way to backup.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been using Time Machine. I can't find the settings in it anywhere. So.
Yeah. Well, settings, you don't need settings. We'll do it for you. This is Apple's attitude. No. Settings, no. We just do. It just works. Don't. And I feel it's a little patronizing. Don't worry your pretty little head. We'll take care of it. You don't need to know where we're putting the data. Time Machine is supposed to store to the local drive. It's supposed to store only to an external drive. That's why every time you plug in a USB drive, Time Machine says, oh, you want me to use that? I'll use that. I could use that. I could back up to that. You want me to back up to that? And I always go, no, go away.
So, okay, but how would I go about deleting those files that are on the... I can't find those either.
Yeah, I don't know. I should probably know this. I don't know what Time Machine calls those files or where it stores them. It may not even store them in a visible place because, again, Apple doesn't want you to accidentally delete those. So let me just look up where Time Machine backs up files. There are a couple of programs you could use. Maybe this is what you want to use. Is Disk Inventory X is a free program I love that will show you in a graphical way the blobs of data on your hard drive. You'll see a big blob that is these backups, and it can identify them and help you remove them. So Disk Inventory X is a really nice tool for Macintosh. Okay. There's similar tools on Windows. In fact, all computers have a similar tool. It's a graphical display. The reason that's useful is you could see where a lot of, you know, what kinds of files are taking up a lot of space. And if you're running out of space, it's very handy. I'll have to do some research. You can Google, you know, where does Time Machine put my backup files? What does it call them? It'd be my guess that Time Machine, given that it's Apple, there it hides it. I'm looking at it right now. I'm not sure how you'd clean that up. It seems as if you turn off Time Machine, it should delete those, but Apple may not let you do that because, well, Apple doesn't want you to do that by accident. Let me look, and I'll get you an answer right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, that's why. If they're visible and you delete them, then Time Machine goes, What happened? Speaking of vision, our photo guy is here, Chris Marquardt. He is a professional photographer. He does workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com, and he is the devil incarnate. Because he is working on me. He's wearing me down to buy a new camera.
Here we go.
And I'm very happy with all my digital cameras. But he says, but wait, Leo, what about film?
You know, it's a thing I've been really diving into for the last almost 7 years now. Next to shooting digital, whenever I'm paid for shooting, I usually do it digitally. But when I shoot for myself, most of that is on film, and it's just a bit different. So, you know, we've been kind of briefly talking about this over the last few weeks, and now questions have actually come up. People are starting to get a bit of an interest there.
Tell us briefly why, in this day and age where we have incredible digital cameras that do amazing jobs, why would we even consider the cost, the hassle of a film camera?
Well, first of all, it's not for everyone, okay? So don't feel bad if you don't.
Are you a hipster? Do you have a record player and a collection of vinyl discs somewhere?
Totally, and a typewriter. Yeah, sure. No, I don't. No, it slows me down. It kind of makes me think about photography more, and it forces me to do a few things that I really don't really have to do more anymore, like doing the light metering myself, because old cameras might not have a light meter. But it really teaches me a lot, and I come back to digital photography with a much deeper understanding because the old technology kind of forces me into it. So that's one of the reasons. There are many, many reasons, but let's not go there because that'll take ages. I could talk for hours on just that. But you know, the question has come up. A few people want to know, hey, what do I do? I mean, I want to at least kind of revive an old camera or maybe buy a used one. You can get them for a really cheap price nowadays.
Nobody wants them, right?
You can get an old SLR for 10, 20 bucks, and it'll probably even be in good shape. So just a few things to look out for, if anyone's interested. A few things to look out for when you want to buy an old or used camera. Maybe some dealer in the vicinity has one in the shop window, or you hear from someone in your... among your relatives, they might have found one up in the attic or down in the basement. So a few things. Here's one, by the way. I'm using this as an example. This is an old Zeiss Icon.
Oh, isn't that cute?
Medium format camera. And the things I would be looking for example, just optical things. Like, is the leather okay? It doesn't really matter if it's not, but it's an optical blemish.
Cosmetic.
Okay? So
yeah. It's
cosmetic. Some dings, leather coming off. Not a biggie from a functionality point of view. Many of my old cameras look horrible in that respect, but I don't really care because I like to play with the technology. Look at the lens. That's another one. The lens should be clear. If you open up the back and look through, it should be clear. Some lenses might have dings. Dings aren't as bad as another thing that you might find in an old lens that has been sitting in a wet basement for a long time, and that is fungus. You know how the
fungus
lens? Yes, the lenses are sometimes lenses have elements that are glued together, so it looks like one piece of glass, but it's actually two, and that glue in between those two pieces of glass sometimes is pretty yummy for some kinds of fungus. So you will see little, like, they look like spider webs going through the lens. That is something to avoid. So have a look at the lens. Another thing are light seals. Now, if you open up a camera, if you open up the back of a camera, obviously one of the purposes of that back is to keep the light out. All right? So along the edges, there are light seals. And if you look at older SLRs, let's say one from the mid-70s or early 70s, they will have light seals made of foam. Now, foam has only been invented sometimes in the 1960s. So back then, they didn't have much long-term experiences regarding the foam. So what happened is that some of those foam seals are starting to disintegrate. They're starting to come apart. They're starting to crumble and come off. And then the camera isn't that light tight anymore. That is something to watch out for. There are replacement kits. You can actually use a toothpick, use some methylized spirits, and kind of take the old ones out, put new ones in. That's definitely a DIY thing that you can do. Just something to look out for. Some of the older cameras don't have that. What they have is called a labyrinth seal. So you have like metal folded around corners, so the light would have to travel around several corners, and this way it can't come through. Those are typically never a problem. One more thing that I will typically watch out for is the shutter. The shutter is a fully mechanical thing in these old cameras. So what you get is, for the longer shutter speeds, and let me just give you a sound example here. For a longer shutter speed, this is 1 second. Hear what it's doing?
What it is that?
It should usually be kind of a continuous sound.
It's like a mechanical timer or something?
It's a mechanical timer. It's like a little clockwork in there, you know?
It sounds like it's slipping a little bit.
That's exactly the problem with some of the older shutters.
So you couldn't use a mechanical timer. Can you have a regular shutter? I mean,
The shutter that you have in there, if you go for the shorter shutter speeds, let's go for a 25th of a second, for example, that one sounds just right. But if you go for the longer ones, like half a second, sometimes those tend to get stuck a bit because the oils in the shutter, I mean, it's fully mechanical, right? So the oils in the shutter will harden over time. They will gets slower. The shutter's so the half second might be a second long, or the 1 second might be 2 seconds
long. But you get to love the quirks and idiosyncrasies.
Well, you know, and there are people who still fix them. So
that's important. I mean, of course, buy it from a reputable source, although you'll see amazing deals on eBay. But you don't know really what you're getting. And if you don't do that, find a person who is adept at repairing vintage cameras, right?
Yeah, and the bigger sellers. I mean, the B&H has a used department. I think Calumet has a used department. KEH.com sells pretty much only used cameras. So there are a lot of dealers out there who still are who sell used cameras and are still very, very reputable. And of course, film is still available for most of those.
Well, that's my next question.
Yes.
So if you get the camera, can you get film? You can.
Yes, you can. But
is it new film or is it like old film?
No, it's new. The Kodak still makes film.
They still make it.
Still makes film. There are still a lot of manufacturers who make
film. Do we think they'll continue to do so, or is this just like the last vestiges?
Oh, I'm pretty sure we'll have
enough
film
of
for
a market.
At least 20 more years.
Okay.
Yeah, there are actually smaller companies starting up now, starting to get into making films.
Now, I used to love going in the darkroom, processing the film, you know, and the chemistry, setting up the Bessemer enlarger, making my own prints. But I don't know if I really want to go out and buy an entire darkroom, dedicate a room to it. Do I have to do that?
No. If you shoot color film, there are still plenty of labs who do develop that. You can bring it to your drugstore. They will still have a way to develop film. They usually, the drugstores, you should collect the film and send it to a central lab, and then it comes back a day or two later. So color negative film, never a problem. Even black and white film, you should be able to get developed there. It's more fun to do it yourself, but there's totally no need to do that. There will still be enough labs out there who can do that service for you. Still a decent price. I mean,
look at the cost
of a new digital camera.
This guy's the devil. Chris Marquardt, he's at Discover the Top Floor. Our assignment in one word, what?
Oh.
We don't remember. What is it? I'll look it up.
Hold on.
Tech Guy Group.
It's Windy.
Windy. Tech Guy Group at Flickr.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Who's walking down the streets of the city? I'll remember that one. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo. If you get a film camera, let me know. I guess what people who shoot film have told me to do is there are labs you can send it to where they will send you back a CD or a digital link that you get the digital file. They develop it and they scan it. So now you have a digital version of that film picture, but it has all of the quirks of film. Crazy. He's the devil. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Kurt in La Habra. Hello, Kurt. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. I've talked to you before, and I'm a blind person, and I still have just a regular old cell phone that does not talk, which I don't like because I can't even call people and stuff if I don't actually know their phone number.
Right.
Even though it's supposed to work. I have about $200 or a little more, and I want to see about buying, getting a smartphone that talks. And I'm glad I listened because I do want one, hopefully, that's Android, and hopefully that will take SD cards.
Ah.
And so I'm glad, like I said, I'm glad I listened to the earlier part of your show about when you mentioned that some places aren't using those anymore.
It's a constantly moving target in this business. Everything changes every minute. So because you're blind, you're looking for good accessibility. I should point out that iPhones probably have the best accessibility out there. But, of course, you can't put an SD card in an iPhone either.
Right. I do want to avoid. I want to avoid Apple if I can.
Okay. You can. Android phones do have good accessibility features. I'm not blind, so I'm not probably a good person to judge which is better, or if one is better than the other. But certainly, both companies pay attention to this. The $200 price range. The thing you need to understand is the cost of the cell phone is far more than the face value of the hardware. Because as soon as you buy a cell phone, now you have to get a monthly plan that includes data as well as phone. And that's going to, over the two-year period that you'll be signing up for, and that's how they still do it in many cases, that could be $1,000 or more dollars.
Well, okay, I want to go through like Metro PCS or somebody right. that has, you know, a month, same charge every month kind of thing.
I am going to recommend, so a lot of times the phone cost is obscured because the phone companies will subsidize the phone. All phones are $200 because they add the rest of the cost of the phone, which is usually about $700. They add that to the bill and they hide it and they lock you in for 2 years. That's changing, by the way. T-Mobile really changed that by going month to month and saying, look, you're going to pay the full price for the phone, but at least you know what you're paying. If you're not getting a subsidized phone, getting a phone under $200, of course, isn't going to give you a state of the art, but there's one that is really good. I think you'd like a lot. Allows you to add an SD card. Is a fairly pure version of Android plus some very nice features. It's from Motorola. It's called the Moto G.
Moto G.
Its list is $180. That's out the door. Not. It's unlocked. Now you're going to have to talk to Metro PCS and say, will you support the Moto G? I bet they will. But,
okay.
But you'll have to check with your carrier, make sure. This is what we call an unlocked phone. It's not locked into any carrier.
That's great.
It's a little smaller than your typical big phone, and that for you, you don't mind, in fact, because you're blind. You don't care about the size of the screen. You'd prefer to have a smaller phone, I imagine, because it's more pocketable.
Yeah.
Because it's a Motorola, it does all those nice things of, like you can say, you know, send a message. When people call, it can announce the caller's name. You want that. It can you can pick up by voice only. It does a lot of stuff voice only. And it's got the feature we were talking about earlier, the Moto Assist, where if you're driving, it knows. I guess you probably don't drive a lot, but if you're...
No, I haven't lately.
If you're driving or you're in a meeting, I use it for, in a meeting, it will silence itself automatically, or it will say, I'll take a message and send a text out. It's very nice, very handy feature. So Moto G... is an excellent choice. If the Metro PCS doesn't support it, I know Ting, which is one of our sponsors, does support it. Ting is very similar to Metro PCS. It's a low-cost MVNO. They resell both Sprint and T-Mobile service. And you might even go just directly to T-Mobile. They're very affordable these days. But you can shop around. I would think anybody is going to support the Moto G. It's a very nice, simple phone at a great price. Highly recommend. In fact, I love that phone. I think that's a great deal.
Okay, that's great. And I know if any of your other chat room people have any suggestions, but this one sounds exactly as a starter. And of course, it obviously does talk, right? And so
it does talk, and it listens. You can yeah. create a the nice thing about Motorola is instead of having a phrase that everybody uses. I made my wake-up phrase, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. And the nice thing about that is it doesn't go off by accident because nobody's saying that anymore. Actually, maybe that's going to come back. You make it your own phrase. And that's a nice feature. I really like these Motorola phones. Somebody's telling me it's $99 now they're doing a sale, so it's even more affordable.
Well, that sounds wonderful. Yeah. You're making it sound better and better, sir.
Yeah, this is Motorola did a nice job. They have the high-end, you know, $400 Moto X, but they've made a value phone, the Moto G, that is very, very good. And, in fact, really the only knock on it is the screen, which you don't care about.
No, I don't.
So I think this is a great choice.
That's wonderful, and I really appreciate your input, and have a very Merry Christmas, sir.
Thank you. You too. I really appreciate
it. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Jim in Orange County, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Leo. Longtime listener. Love your show.
Thank you so much.
I'm in the process of leasing some retail storefront space, and I'm learning that the phone company and the internet service providers charge an arm and a leg for
business
service.
Business service, baby. Yeah.
If AT&T sold gasoline, they would ask you whether you were a business or a retail, an individual, and gas would be four times as much.
Isn't that crazy?
It is. But the building we're looking at, they have AT&T DSL, which everybody in the building says is horrible. It goes out all the time. And it's max three up, three down.
Oh, it's terrible. Megabytes. Oh, it's terrible.
And I called DSL Extreme and places like that, and they said they can't do any better.
And by the way, that's because these independent. This is a good system, and the FCC did the right thing for us with for some reason, with phone calls, phone companies, not with cable. They allow third parties to use the phone company infrastructure to provide internet service. So it's not just AT&T. AT&T owns the wires, but they're required by law to allow DSL Extreme and other independent internet service providers to put equipment in their office and offer you service. But they're buying it from AT&T. So you see, they're kind of at the mercy of the incumbent phone carrier. So you may not get a better deal.
The pipe coming in is only so big.
It's AT&T's, and you know, DSL Extreme. Sometimes I've had them negotiate better speeds, but sometimes not. So we have to take a break. Can you hang on through the top of the hour? Because I want to help
Absolutely.
You with this. But choosing your internet service for your business is a big deal. I'll tell you a little bit about what we go through because we need a lot of bandwidth. But first, this word from your local station, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, let me talk a little bit about our sponsor today on the show. We really love Epson. You just heard the Epson ad. I'm all in on Epson. Epson's in every nook and cranny of my house and my business. And I tell you what, these new EcoTank printers make me even happier. Go to Epson.com/EcoTank to learn more. The idea, and one of the reasons Epson wants to kind of reach out to potential Epson owners is to understand why this is such a good idea. The idea is, the ink comes in the box with the printer. So I think we can grant that these are the best printers ever. I mean, these PrecisionCore printers, 40 million drops of ink a second. They're silent. They're beautiful text, about 3 pages a minute on my Workforce Pro printer. You get high speed, vivid colors, laser quality black text. You get two-sided printing, 30-page auto document feeder. Prints wirelessly over your Wi-Fi, and that works with tablets and smartphones too, which is awesome. I mean, I can go on and on. I can scan to my Google Cloud as well as my computer. I mean, there's so many nice features here. And these new EcoTanks, they come with the ink in the box loaded and ready to print, like the ET4550. It comes with 8,500 color pages, 11,000 black pages or some mix thereof, about 50 ink cartridge sets worth in the box. And when it's time to reorder the economical and convenient bottles or bags, make it really simple and big money savings. Epson.com/EcoTank to learn more. Great printers, great value, and they come with the ink. So you don't have to run to the store or get more ink in the middle of a print job. I'm a big fan. Epson.com/EcoTank. Transform the way your home, office, or work group prints for the best combination of ease and value. Turn to the new Epson EcoTank printers. EPSON.com/EcoTank. And we thank Epson so much for their support and for bucking the trend in the industry and making a great printer. A great printer with all the ink in the box. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz at 8888 Ask Leo. That's what we do each and every week at this time, at this place. We gather together as geeks in common, or budding geeks, or wannabe geeks, or people who are not geeks in any form or fashion, but are just enjoy foreign language programming. That's you're welcome to. Website is techguylabs.com. I put all the answers there. We put audio and video of the show there after the show. We put the playlist, the music, the Nathan play. Everything goes on the website. And it's free, and there's no sign-up. I don't have a monthly fee or, you know, a membership. No, I'm not that sophisticated, to be honest. I just, you know, it's a website. You go, you click, you enjoy. Techguylabs.com. Good to write that down, though. That way you don't have to write anything else down while I'm talking, because James DeRuvo's there. He's scribbling it all down as we talk. And then Josh Windisch in my office, he puts all the extra stuff in there. And you are invited to comment as well. If you hear me say something or you have something to add. We were talking with Jim in Orange County, who is a business owner and has discovered that you get charged extra if you're a business owner for your phone and your internet. Well, howdy doody. It's called business service. And I guess the rationale AT&T and others have is that, well, we have to provide a higher standard of service to businesses, except they don't. But that's another matter entirely. So you think that DSL solution that they're offering, you're not crazy about that. And nobody else can. 3 megabits, that's not very fast. So what else do you think? Have you looked into other choices?
We have. Right now, AT&T is saying that they could install a fiber, which would be 10 megabytes down, 10 megabytes up, for an incredible value at $650 a month.
Wow! But that, that is a value if you compare that to the cost of a T1 line even 5 years ago, which was one-tenth the speed. So that's why it's in their head that $650 a month is a good deal. In fact, it is a good deal. We spend thousands of dollars a month on internet access. Of course, I have an internet business, so we have fiber from our cable company, from Comcast. We have DSL from two different providers because redundancy is important, and we spend a lot of money for that. And we have, I think, 150 megabits up and down. So $650 sounds like a good deal to me, but I understand that's probably more than you want to pay. Plus, and I don't know, if the fiber isn't already on premises, you'll have to pay a fee for them to string the fiber in.
Actually, it's not installed, and they said they would do that for free.
Oh, good.
They installed it to the building next door recently.
Okay, so it's easy for them to get it over there.
Right.
Yeah. And we're faced with we actually paid thousands of dollars to have Comcast trench down the street, a long way, to put fiber into our building. And all the businesses along the street are grateful because they all now have access to fiber, and they didn't have that before.
Right. Well, Time Warner says they can come out and do a site inspection, but their closest hookup is 390 feet away.
Yeah.
So they'll probably want to charge an arm and a leg for trenching also.
Be worth asking. Be worth asking anyway.
True.
Yeah.
But one option I found yesterday which intrigued me is called Microwave.
Yeah.
And they're promoting a 5 down, 5 up. Service for $3.99 a month, which is,
if it's a consistent 5 down and 5 up, that's probably all you need. I mean, what is the business?
Well, it's a used motorcycle dealership, so
people aren't coming in there to surf the net. You're using it for your credit card transactions, for your own internal use. Maybe you use QuickBooks or whatever online.
All of our systems will be software as a service system. So,
that's fine. 5 megabits is fine, unless you have a dozen employees all using it at the same time.
Right. No, we won't have that.
Yeah. Five is pretty good. I mean, you can't compare it with your home service, because the question is, it's symmetric, which means and you should also inquire, and this is another reason business internet is more expensive, about a service level agreement, or SLA.
Yes.
That will tell you what guaranteed uptime they have and so forth. A microwave is line of sight. It can be very good as long as you don't get a tree in the way. Weather might impact it. If it's heavy rain or snow, it could easily break the microwave beam. That's how you're getting it. So somewhere in your vicinity, they have a transmitter that is microwaving right to a receiver on your roof or on your premises. It has to be outside.
Okay.
Microwave is a very good way to operate.
Well, that's the one I was unfamiliar with. I looked at the satellite and ditched that idea right away.
Yeah, no, you don't want satellite. Microwave would be better than satellite. Latency's low. It's just like wired, but there's no wires until you get to their receiver, and then it's wired from the rest of the... It's kind of... Maybe it's analogous to cell, but it's line of sight. It's very directional line of sight. They actually aim an antenna at you.
Okay.
A lot of people use microwave in situations exactly like yours. I would certainly ask get some customer references. You know, uptime is not merely determined by how well the technology they deliver the last mile. You know, that's the last mile, is that from their head end to you, their last mile is microwave, no, and otherwise not different from any other provider, in the sense that they may go up and down. Sounds like AT&T goes up and down a lot. And if they go up and down, it doesn't matter how good a connection you have to on the microwave length, you're going to lose your internet access. So that's why an SLA, a service level agreement, is important. It'll tell you what their guaranteed uptime is and references. And if they're a business, they're going to have references. And you can just say, you know, call somebody, say, yeah, you have this MMDS microwave service. What do you think? I have heard very good things about it. I don't have it, but I know people who do. It's not uncommon. Tends to be more in metro areas, obviously.
Gotcha. Yep. So if Time Warner is available, that would obviously be my best choice.
Not necessarily. It's going to come down to cost again. They would trench cable out, just like, you know, a cable TV. You'd get, you know, you might get some benefits from having TV as well as internet access. I just don't know. You know, it really, internet service is and the quality of it is very local. Time Warner is a national company. But how the service is in your neck of the woods is really very localized. So it's always good to ask around, ask neighbors. And you might even be able to get other people in your building to defer the cost of trenching. If you say, hey, we can do this, it's going to cost $5,000. Would you be willing to kick in?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, because they get the benefit too. Once they get to your building or in the neighborhood, then everybody gets it. So I would, I'd inquire. I mean, this is worth research because it's going to be a fairly significant fixed cost for your business, and you want to make sure you get usable service. If you need software as a service, if your repair manuals and your diagnostic stuff is all online, you can't afford to go down.
True that.
You need reliable service. This is a very interesting problem, but I think research will get you a long way on this.
Well, I always defer to, you know, the best resource I have, and I always felt you were that.
Well, I can tell you a little bit about microwave, but I just can't tell you how it's going to be in Orange County.
Gotcha. One thing before I go, I was listening on hold, and you spoke about having the ability to rewind video and solve an argument between you and your wife.
I don't have it. I wish I did.
Okay. After 25 years of marriage, I can tell you the last thing you want is the ability to prove she is wrong.
Oh, what am I thinking? You're absolutely right. There's only one answer. Yes, dear. You're right, dear. No, you're absolutely right. What was I thinking?
Yeah, that's not something you want.
Well, I have the tape right here. Oh, yeah? Well, I got something right here for you, buddy boy. Good point, Jim. Yeah. Thank you for the great marital advice. My wife's sitting across from me right now, and I'm sure she's nodding. Thank you, Jim.
Have a good day.
You too. Take care. She runs my business. So it's yes, dear, every time. 8888-ASK-LEO, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Happy wife, happy life. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. George in Germany, in Konstanz, Germany. Hello, George.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. Glad to have you listening on the internet.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. I have a question, and I'm running into problems with my iPhone. I'm a native Unix and Windows guy, and it's the first piece by Apple, or I bought by Apple. And I'm becoming familiar with it, and today I recorded some videos, and I wanted to use the native Apple iCloud photo library possibility to load the stuff up, but it's not doing. I've enabled everything I could enable, but it does not occur. It does not arrive on the iCloud first after something like 3 hours.
What?
Yeah, exactly. That's also what I've mentioned to myself.
You said the same thing. What?
So, yes, exactly.
Of course, Apple wants you to use all Macintosh, but this is not, all Apple products. This is not an issue of Apple products because you can't even get it to the cloud. So syncing to your PC is or your Unix box is secondary to all this. So Apple has this new app they call Photos that's replaced iPhoto on both the phone and the desktop. And the idea is you don't have to, but you can have it do a sync to the iCloud photo library. It means it'll upload all the originals from your phone, video and stills, to the cloud. You can go see it at iCloud.com, log into your account. And if you have appropriate software on your Windows or your Mac, it'll synchronize down to your computer. Or you can just download it from iCloud.com. Here's my suggestion. I mean, you've already, I'm sure, gone in and you looked at the settings. You turned on the iCloud photo library. You made sure that you enabled it. I guess the Niners just won, right? I just hear screaming in the other room. Sorry. I know your football is a little different than our football, but I think you have the same reaction when your team wins, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you make sure that's all turned on in the settings and so forth. I'm not sure what the issue is. I can say that there are other choices. For instance, and maybe even better for a Unix/Windows guy, I use Google's Photos, same name, different service, does the same thing. You take a picture, it synchronizes it up to the cloud. You can choose to have a smaller version. If you use a smaller version, they give you unlimited storage. And by the way, it's a pretty good version. It's just a high-quality JPEG. But you can also store originals. It's a little less expensive than iCloud storage. And it will synchronize down on Windows. If you have Picasa or Google Photos, it will synchronize to that. So I would try it with another service just to see. I'm sure there's some setting in there. You know, you go to the photos and camera area of settings. You make sure that I presume you've got all these settings, right? The iCloud photo libraries turned on. You could decide whether you want to optimize phone storage. That's what I would do. That means instead of downloading originals to your phone, originals from other sources, it uses size-appropriate files that save a little space locally. Upload to my photo stream has to be turned on as well. That's automatically upload new photos and send them to all your iCloud devices when connected to Wi-Fi. Do you ever connect to Wi-Fi?
Yeah, yes, it all is, right. Permanently. Okay. Yeah. I think I will give also Dropbox another chance here to make this thing be done, because I originally wanted Apple to make their money there, but if it does not run, okay.
Well, the heck with it, right. So you have many choices. There's Google, you mentioned Dropbox, Microsoft OneDrive also works, Flickr. So many companies now are doing Amazon. I don't know about in Germany, in the States. All of these services offer either low cost or free. Amazon offers free photo storage, unlimited. Flickr offers 1 terabyte free. That's virtually unlimited. As you mentioned, Dropbox you pay for, iCloud you pay for. Google you could or could not pay for, depending on the quality of the images. I use all of them. Because, boy, I don't want to ever lose a picture, right? And why not? So I have copies everywhere. I'm never going to have to worry about backing up my photos again. A lot of this is going to depend what you're doing on the desktop. You want to get them to the desktop?
Yes, I am. So I will.
Dropbox would probably be a good choice. I don't know what they have available on Linux.
I will dig it out, so that's no problem. I only wanted to hear your approach, and you have just mentioned it. You are on all...
I use them all. Use them all. And it may be you've run out of iCloud storage. You know, they only give you a couple of gigabytes for free. Then you have to pay for it. It's not expensive, but it's not the cheapest out there either. It's in the U.S., $1.99 for 200 gigabytes, $1.99 a month. That's the service level I pay for. But, it, you know, when you're getting a terabyte, five times more free from Flickr, $1.99 a month sounds like a lot. So I think that, yeah, there's a lot of good choices. Again, Amazon may not make that available in Germany. I know there's a lot of restrictions, geographic restrictions, but there's some good choices. Hey, I'm so glad you listen, George, in Germany. It's great to have you.
Thank you for your advice and support. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Have Auf Wiedersehen.
Yeah. Danke, gleichfalls.
Okay, bye-bye. I love it. We're in a great time for photographers. Unlimited storage from a variety of services. If you're an Amazon Prime member, you get free unlimited storage from them. You should always look and see, are we storing originals? Are we storing reduced quality? Google, unlimited free storage for reduced quality. Although, again, I don't notice a big loss in quality. One of the things I like about Google Photos is the lots of features built in. Things like automatic categorization of photos. It can see that this is Paris or... This is Lisa, and it will automatically categorize those. It'll automatically do some transformations. It'll say, hey, I just made a black and white out of that picture. Right? What do you think? And this is all done programmatically by computers. You know, Google loves doing stuff like that. I like those features. Some people may say, well, I don't want my photos on Google's cloud. Understandable. then there are other choices too. So lots of choices out there. There's a good time to be a photographer. Unless you're shooting film. And then all bets are off. Bob in San Jose. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm wonderful.
You must be. You got to be excited at least they won for a change.
Well, at this point, it doesn't much matter, but it is nice to see a win, especially against a great team like the Bears.
That's true.
At Soldier Field. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I knew they won. I wasn't looking, but I heard a scream from my wife down the hall, so...
Yeah. Well, I was watching, but I wasn't paying any attention, and I heard you. Anyway,
overtime victory. Yes, we don't like to mention that because I don't want anybody to turn off the show.
Oh right, yeah. So we can talk baseball then. Yeah. Okay. So what I'm doing here is I have a video recording studio where we shoot videos that go up, or we do podcasts out of those. Video podcasts and webinars.
Oh,
and
kind of like me, only you make money.
Yeah, maybe. Not really sure about that part.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
Yeah, so we, you know, got camera, you know, Heil mic, you know, for the podcasting.
Oh, yeah, that's what I use.
Right, you know, green screen background. So, I mean, we've got one camera set up, and everything seems to work just fine. Now, what they want to do is... they want a second camera.
Oh boy!
And you know, at the right angle.
Oh boy!
Right, so they can do the second thing. So I said, okay, we can probably do that. We set up a second PC, you know, and do a full recording.
Hang on, because I got to take a break. But hang on, we'll finish this story. The case of the green screen camera when we return. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking to Bob in San Jose. He has. Yep. So, what is your business? I'm intrigued now.
Oh, it's training, internet marketing for software products and so forth.
Okay.
All right.
And so you have a little video studio. You got a green screen. The nice, you know, anybody who's seen a weather forecast has seen a green screen in action. The weather forecaster's looking at a piece of green wall, but with the magic of television, they can put a map up there. And green screen allows you to have any backdrop you want behind you, so it's a very affordable and easy way to build a set, in effect.
Yeah. So when we're doing our recordings that are not live, being presented out over the internet or anything, right? You know, we've just done it with the one camera, PC, Camtasia, edit in Premiere afterwards.
Right.
Now I've got the second camera, so I figured set up another PC with Camtasia to record.
No. Now we're getting more complicated. You need a switcher. Because the problem with the green screen is if you switch cameras and the green screen doesn't have a equivalent switch in background, it's going to be extremely disorienting to the people at home. They're going to say, well, how come I'm looking at the guy's side, but I still see the same front-on picture on the green screen?
Right, right.
I think you're already seeing this problem.
Yeah, because then we'd probably use a mural that's on the wall or something. It's just to get that side view. My biggest problem is trying to do the audio. I've got one mic that's got to go to split to two places.
So what we do is we use a switcher, which means you have one device, multiple cameras, multiple microphones. As you're shooting, in fact, it saves you time in edit because as you're shooting, if you wish, you could switch cameras. You're recording the output of the switcher, so those switches will get preserved as the final version. You can also record independently if you wish and do the edit later. That's what you're doing right now.
Because normally it's one. There's only one person. The one behind the camera starts everything.
But they want two cameras, so they're starting to get in this notion that you're going to switch from time to time, right?
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, you can go. We use something called TriCaster. It's from a company called Neutek, NEWTEK.
Right.
They have a variety of solutions, some very inexpensive. If you only have two cameras, you can get one of their simpler boxes. They have the green screen built into it. So that makes it easy because you still have a green screen. You can put any image you want behind them. And when you switch cameras, it handles all of that automatically. You can have multiple cameras. You don't need a mural anymore. You still can have that green background, but it'll handle all of that. TriCaster is not the only solution. It's the one we use. We love it. We're big fans because I run an entire, basically, I run a TV station, an internet TV station using the TriCaster. But the one we use is a little more expensive. It's like a $25,000 unit. But you can get Blackmagic also makes inexpensive video switchers under $1,000 that are excellent as well. There are many other companies that do that. I like Blackmagic and I like Nutex, so I would look at both of those. And I think your system would be, it's, you know, I know you, as you said, we're trying to make money at this. But if you see this coming down the road, the complexity building up a little bit, this might be a prudent time. Same thing, same problem if you have audio going into one computer and then audio going to another computer. You've got to synchronize the audio. You've got to synchronize the video. It gets complicated. The TriCaster has a mixer built in. It handles all of that.
Yeah, that's the problem is just that it's one person doing this.
Yeah, yeah. So, but why do they want a second camera?
Oh, to give the second view, to give it
variety.
Prettier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, basically, it's like B-roll.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I don't know what the least expensive TriCaster is. I do know that Blackmagic offers solutions under $1,000. I don't know if they have green screening or keying, as we call it, built in.
Yeah, we could probably live without that.
Yeah, we build sets. I want physical sets because as good as keying is, there's always a little bit of a digital artifact from it. Maybe your hair looks a little green around the edges, things like that. So we use physical sets. I like doing that. But there are lots of choices out there. It would make your life a lot easier.
Yeah, especially since I have to do most of this remote. So I set it up, ship it to them, and they set it
up.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, and
yeah, you don't want to ship at the point where you're buying two PCs, two cameras. I mean, you're really almost there to the cost of a TriCaster, and it's going to be so much easier.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I would take a look at that. It's the same thing with the audio. So he is using Camtasia. You might want to step up if you're going to continue to use a software solution. You can have multiple cameras and do it in software with Wirecast. We use that in the studio as well, and VidBlaster. Both of these companies offer software solutions around about $1,000 that'll allow you to use one computer with multiple inputs. That will also simplify that software switching. And in fact, it does keying too. I have to say I love the TriCaster for reliability, but price can add up. So VidBlaster is one that's I think a German company, and Wirecast is the other. They've been doing this for a long time for a lot of video podcasters, as a matter of fact. Yeah, this is a question that we are always examining and thinking about, because we always want to get better. Arnie in Palm Springs, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Arnie.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk with you again. And I have a problem that I can't believe I'm the only one that has it. I must have approximately, well over 100 carousels of Kodak slots.
So did I. Well, not so many, but I had a few, yeah.
And obviously, I'm at a point where I'm trying to digitize them.
It was frustrating because my mom had them, but I had the projector. And she said, well, if you ever want to have a slideshow, I'll just send them out. And I said, that's not going to work. And then, of course, only one person can have the slides. So if my sister wants to have a slideshow, we got to send the slides there and the projector. So, yes, digitizing them is clearly the right answer.
Now, my big question is there something that will take a Kodak carousel tray of slides?
Oh, wouldn't that be awesome? And just one by one go through the carousel.
Exactly.
Oh, I don't know of one. That would be an interesting product.
I got something from the Hamaker Schlatter catalog called Power Slide.
Yeah.
And basically, it takes a rectangular tray of slides, which means I have to take them out of the carousel and put them into the rectangular tray. And then, all of a sudden, I did get to digitize them, and they came out lousy.
Yeah.
And I called up PowerSlide, and they said, this doesn't work very well with Kodachrome.
Oh, please. Oh, what? I mean,
nobody ever used Kodachrome.
No, who heard of Kodachrome slides? That's crazy talk. Okay, well, There was ektachrome and Kodachrome, and that was about it, as far as I know. Okay, so obviously that's in Hammacher Schlemmer. You know, there are companies that make these automated slide scanners. I'm looking at one on Amazon for $1,000 from Pacific Image Electronics. It doesn't take carousels, alas, but not so hard to move the slides into a separate kind of tray. What we did with mine is I took them to a service bureau. Now, you have an awful lot of them. It might not be affordable to do that, but it was sure.
It was like, you know, hundreds of dollars. Well,
we spent maybe $600 to scan the family slides, but now we all have copies of it. It's awesome. That's probably the better solution. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, it's an issue of cost, and I understand why you would, you know, say, well, can I do it myself? But then remember, the cost of doing it yourself is, you know, I have to buy the device and then the time and the annoyance. And one of the things, we got the service bureau, they cleaned the slides before, so all the dust was gone. They did color correction on them. They came out fantastic. And then everybody got a CD, so my sister has them, my mom has them, I have them. It's really great. So I think given the amount, you know, what's your time worth? Now, you could also go through the slides, pare them down. Surely you don't want all of those slides. Our show today brought to you by Gazelle, the great online marketplace where you can buy as well as sell used gadgets. Gazelle is the place we always go to trade in our old devices for cash. If I have an old phone, instead of throwing it in a drawer, that's crazy. I wouldn't do that. That's like throwing a $100 bill in a drawer. I'll go to Gazelle and at least get a quote. Those quotes are guaranteed for 30 days. So you can find out exactly what your device is worth. Once you get the first quote, though, don't stop there. Get all that stuff gathering dust. Put them in Gazelle. Once you decide, all right, I think this is a good deal, and you can take up to 30 days to do that. You can decide never to use it. But if you decide, you press the button. They send you a box because they pay the postage. They turn it around fast. They'll wipe data if you forget to. So you don't have to worry about privacy. They even buy broken iPhones and iPads. So sometimes you can't wipe the data because they're broken. But they'll do it for you. And they'll give you a great price for it. They'll send you a check. Or if you're in a hurry, get PayPal. If you buy a lot of Amazon stuff, I would go with the Amazon gift card. Because the Amazon gift card, they bump 5%. Nice. Incidentally, Gazelle's great. They will. We've had this happen twice now. We got the initial quote, sent it in, and they said, no, you know what? It's worth more than that. And they sent us like $50 more, which is really nice. Gazelle. Now, you might say, well, what happens to all that great stuff that gets sent to Gazelle? The very best, the creme de la creme, they sell in their certified pre-owned store. Now, everything in the store has been, of course, thoroughly gone through. They have a 30-point check list to make sure it's fully functional, no scratches on the screen, things like that. When you buy a device at Gazelle, and they sell iPhones, iPads, Samsung Galaxy phones, when you buy a device, you're getting a great price, and you can choose from the variety of qualities. So you can get it fair, good, or excellent condition. Of course, you're going to save money. But even the fare is fully functional. It just shows a little more signs of use. And if you're replacing a lost or broken phone, it probably is no... I'm sure it's no worse than the original. Great for getting a phone for a kid or a tablet, first tablet for somebody. Devices available for support by major carriers like AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and Sprint. But you never have to worry about your contract. There's no contract. Gazelle, Gazelle.com. Give new life to used electronics. Trade in for cash or buy certified pre-owned at gazelle.com today. Really great people, too. Gazelle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Well, the chat room to the rescue. There is a company that sells a device that will take your Kodak carousels and scan those slides in at a high speed. 30 slides, they say 30 slides a minute, only costs a very reasonable $3,395. So this would make sense if you're doing a lot of them. And maybe if you have an assistant. 5,600 pixels per inch. You know, remember, you want to clean the slides before you do it. You might have to do some retouching once you get them digitized. But there you go. There is a solution. Slide Snap, SlideSnap Pro.com. And the light version is a little bit less expensive. Doesn't probably do as much. It's $26.95. It's kind of a, you know, kind of a purpose-built thing. 15 slides a minute. That is great. If you had a lot or you were doing a service bureau, I think this might be worth it. SlideSnap Pro. Thank you, chat room. That's a good deal. It's not cheap, but if you had... See, that's the thing. We only had... What did we have? 20 maybe carousels. Maybe not. Maybe not even that many. 10, 15 carousels. So it was cheaper for us and certainly a great time saver, and we got great results sending it to a service bureau. My sister is in Rhode Island, and she found a company, since defunct, alas, run by students at the Rhode Island School of Design, and they did a great job. Great job. They scanned them, they cleaned them, as I said, they color corrected them, and we now have those images. But and I've used Scan Cafe as well. That's another choice. I have not used them for slides, so I don't know how they do slides. I just got my mom a box. You can go to scancafe.com and buy a box, like a shoe box. And they say it's a flat rate, stuff as many pictures as it'll fit. So mom's doing that right now. She's going to send that in. She says, will it do slides? I said, yes. She said, will it do prints? Yeah. I said, anything, whatever you can fit in there. And then they scan it. And I've heard good things. Scancafe.com. And then, you may find a local Photoshop that does this as well. Jim in Morrison, Colorado. You're next. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. This is Jim. I have a question regarding Windows 10. I'm thinking of going to Windows 10, and I need a program that will do what the Windows Media Player did on Windows 7.
Yeah, so does everyone. So Microsoft told us that they have telemetry that tells them how many people have launched Windows Media Center. They say it's a tiny number of people. And of those people, almost all of them didn't use it. They just launched it probably by accident and closed it. They said not enough people use it for us to keep it up to date. And they hadn't, in fact, updated it for years, since 2009, mm-hmm. I think, 6 years. So they finally decided with Windows 10, look, I mean, with Windows 8, you could download it. It wasn't updated. It was still a six-year-old product, but you could at least download it and use it. With Windows 10, they go so far as removing it. If you're upgrading a Windows 8 machine and you have Windows Media Center on there, they remove it. So, yeah, there's a lot of demand, I think, for people for something that can replace Windows. Now, you're saying Media Player or Media Center?
Well, I think it's the Media Center.
That's what I think. Is, yeah, because the player is still there.
Yeah, what I do is I rip CDs that I own to the computer and then sync them to a SanDisk MP3 player. And
music only?
No, these are actually audio books.
But they're audio only, right? There's no video.
That's correct.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of great solutions there. The people who want a replacement for Windows Media Center, they want that lean-back experience where they can DVR programs and have a channel guide and all that. What you're asking is easy peasy. Because really all you're doing is ripping a CD, that is copying the contents of the CD to your hard drive in a form that can be played back, and then putting it on a device to play it back or listening on your computer. That's a simple thing to do. There's lots of programs that will rip CDs.
Well, what I found is that, yes, I can rip the CD easily and convert it to an MP3 or a WMA file.
Right.
And then transfer it to the SanDisk, but in the transferring of the SanDisk, it doesn't seem to be exactly compatible.
It's not playing back. Yeah. Interesting. Where are you getting the audiobooks? It's not they're not copy protected, are they?
No. I own them.
Okay, and you're taking them off a CD.
Yeah.
You're making them MP3.
Yeah.
You should be able to literally just mount the SanDisk, you know, put it in. Is it a thumb drive, the SanDisk? What kind of memory card is it?
It's the SanDisk Clipsport.
It's a USB thumb drive.
Right.
Yeah, and you just...
No. It's a player.
Yeah, I understand, but how do you connect it to your machine?
Through the USB.
Yeah. And you see it. When you connect it on the USB, you can actually see it. It mounts on the desktop, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can... Are you just dragging files over to it?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the problem, is that I think it's the problem with the header on the files that I drag over isn't complete. It wants to see the artist and the...
No, of course not. That information's not there.
Right.
Yes, I get what you're saying. Yeah, what you can easily remove, take the data file on the CD, turn it into an MP3. What you're missing is the metadata. Are you able to play it?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So it's not that you can't play it, but you just don't see the album art and there's no order. You want chapter one, chapter two, chapter three. That's called metadata. Yeah. And so whatever it is that's ripping your CDs is not able to figure out the metadata. That was one thing, actually, Windows Media Center did well. It would go out to an online database, probably CDDB, although I'm not sure, and say, hey, what is this CD? And then it would get that information and would add it to the MP3.
What you want
is some program that will rip music and preserve the metadata. So let me think. Actually, let me ask the chat room what they recommend. iTunes, for instance, on a Macintosh does this. You could install Apple's iTunes. It would do that.
Yeah, but I don't think Apple's iTunes would be compatible with a SanDisk.
Oh, yeah. The SanDisk, you can make MP3s with iTunes. So SanDisk will play anything that's an MP3. Let me look, though. What we want is probably MediaMonkey would do this. This is my favorite, by the way. It's free. MediaMonkey. But what you're looking for is something that will take the CD and then go out and get the information. See, it's not on the CD, believe it or not. That information, the author, the chapter, and all that stuff, that's not there. There's no way to encode that onto a traditional audio CD. So what they have to do is go online to a database and say, okay, there's 8 cuts on here. These are the different lengths of the cuts. Do you have anything that matches that? And that's literally what they do. And then they're able to look it up and say, yeah. And in fact, sometimes I bet you've had this happen. With Media Center, they'll say, well, either this is Joy to the World by Three Dog Night, or it's Master and Commander. We're not sure which. And then you click, it's Master and Commander. It's not a song. And then it says, okay, good. We'll put that information in.
Yeah, I've gotten some really weird song answers.
Yeah. Express Rip CD Ripper. Write down some stuff. We'll put this in the show notes, too. We'll automatically fill out the data by going to CDDB. You want something that will go out to these databases and find it.
Actually, I just want to name it myself, just the title.
Oh, that's even easier. There's some very good software that will allow you to add tags to MP3s. You rip it as MP3s?
WMAs.
Don't do it anymore as WMAs. That's very Windows-specific. That's a proprietary format. You'd be much better off using MP3s. Quality's the same.
Yeah, but it's not as compact.
Yeah, you can make it as compact.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I would my recommendation is MediaMonkey for all this, for ripping, for modifying tags. I've used a program called MP3 Tag. I can't remember. I've used it for so long, I don't remember if it's free. Yeah, it's free. And it allows you to do mass tagging of MP3s. It doesn't do WMAs. Take it back. It does do WMAs. So, and since your SanDisk clip will read WMAs, you can go ahead and continue to use that. And it allows you to do, for instance, name all the files with the name of the book and then modify it as needed.
Okay.
All right. Hey, I thank you.
Very good.
I thank you for the call. We've run out of time. I wasn't paying attention. But have a great Geek Week. Thank you, Nathan Staten. Thank you, Heather Hammond. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We'll see you next time. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.